Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, I think we had a great first hour. We had you well-known Matt Goodwin and Jacob Tyler. They are now brother-in-laws, and they're very intelligent guys. They're gutsy. We were all there to Charlottesville together. We have another guest tonight that was in Charlottesville, and you all know him. Anybody that's been in the movement knows the fellow we're bringing on that right now. We all love him and honor him. Our guys, all three of us got to speak to the one and only Sam Dixon during the break. Now, we're getting ready to go to Sam Dixon. He was at Charlottesville. He's an attorney. He's been in the movement for forever, almost. You know, we're the same age, too. We're 74 years old. Very, very proud to have you on tonight, Mr. Sam Dixon. How are you doing tonight, brother?
Well, I'm honored to be here. Thank you for having me on. I'm doing fine.
Sir. Well, you know, as you well know, we've been talking about Charlottesville. And a lot of people might say that we're overdoing it because this is our third segment. We'll have two more after this. And like I was telling the audience, hopefully we will have a recording of Jacob Goodwin next week. He's supposed to call in here tomorrow from prison. He was one of the Shield Walters, one of the young Shield Walters in Charlottesville that they saved lives. They surely did. And he was a good guy. Paid the price. He's going to be calling tomorrow. But Sam, before we take off, I've got to read something that you sent me. You told me to read. And I want the people to listen very carefully. This is that poem you told me about. And then you can dissect it. And then from then on, do anything you want to, because I think this poem, you pointed me to this poem, and it has so much to do with our race and what I hope they do pretty soon. The name of this poem, folks, is Wrath, the Wrath of the Awakened Saxon. It was not part of their blood. It came to them very late, with long arrears to make good, when the Saxon began to hate. They were not easily moved. They were icy, willing to wait till every count should be proved, ere the Saxon begin to hate. The voices were even and low. Their eyes were level and straight. There was neither sign nor show when the Saxon began to hate. It was not preached to the crowd. It was not taught by the state. No man spoke it aloud when the Saxon began to hate. It was not suddenly bred. It will not swiftly abate. I hope it doesn't. Through the chilled years ahead, when time shall count the date that the Saxon began to hate. There's a fellow gave a little note here from his Francis Parker Yockney. He has a site called Imperium, and he says, "This destiny does not tire, nor can it be broken, and its mantle of strength descends upon those in its service." Sam, thank you so much for putting me over that poem. That was a great poem, and I think it has a great bearing on what we're going to be talking about tonight. Go ahead, Mr. Sam.
Well, I'm glad you liked it. You know, it's a poem by Rudyard Kipling. Most people are familiar with Rudyard Kipling's "If," but he wrote other poems that are very significant. He wrote another one called "Deadlier Than the Mail," which is a profound thing on the psychological differences between men and women. Some years back, two scientists at Harvard won the Nobel Prize for their work on the human brain, on the differences between men and women, which are profound in how they think. And one of the things they said was that women think intuitively and men think analytically. And Kipling predicted all of that long, long before. He said that in that poem, "Deadlier Than the Mail," that the male worships a god of abstract reason that no woman understands. There are a lot of good poems. Here's a little maxim for you, which I think is very timely for our race. And that is, he said that the strength of the wolf is in the pack, and the strength of the pack is in the wolf. And that exactly the corrective we need to excessive individualism. The individual is strongest in the society. That's what meets the individual's need, is to be a member of the community. And the community is strong through the strong individuals that make up the community. And we have been led astray by excessive individualism in the English-speaking world, and especially in the United States.
I remember you telling me that, Sam, we had a great conversation the other day. You told that that was your opinion, and I think it has great merit. I really do. And, you know, if you want to see living proof, if you look out into the other races, and I point out the Negro race, for instance, they stick together, probably not as much as the Jewish race, but the Negro, if you pick up the Negro race, I've been around them all my life. I told Sam about how I'd battled my way to and from school at early age, but they stick together like glue, don't they, Sam?
They do. When I see these white women, especially in Atlanta, where I am much of the year, there are very few. There are a lot of these women, these very liberal women, who pride themselves on a lack of any racial feeling at all. They're on everybody's side except their own racist side. Sometimes I tell them when if they get rude to me and unpleasant to me, I will tell them that I am not a white supremacist because we don't have many women like Rosa Parks. Rosa Parks was loyal to her own people. If we had women loyal to our own people like Rosa Parks, we'd be in much better shape. But they pride themselves on not being loyal, which is really you can't blame them. They're told this. We're all told this. That the worst possible thing would be to care for your people. That's the worst thing you can do, is to be a European Christian who's concerned about European Christians. That means that you're a terrible person. You're an immoral person.
Amen. I could not agree with you more. And I've told everybody in this Western Hemisphere that listens to this show, they know that I'm a big runner. And I don't know what it is, Sam, but runners, as a group, they seem to be, lack of a better word, libtards. As a group, most of them are libtards. They're conservatives. They hate themselves. They hate their parents. They hate their grandparents for being white. They talk about white. We talked about a group of people in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Even after they had their home was burnt down, when the blacks and the Antifa were burning down Minneapolis, St. Paul, they said, well, they had their homes burnt down, they had their business wrecked, but they deserved it because they had white privilege. I talked to some people from Minneapolis, St. Paul that told me that. They were down here as refugees almost because they were scared to death. But, Sam, I know you're not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but what happened? What happened to our people that made them hate themselves so much like that?
How many hours do you have, Eddie?
Was it the Frankfurt School? Everybody likes to blame it on the Frankfurt School.
I'm not a psychiatrist, but I have thought about it. I think there are a lot of things. First of all, our people are pretty simple. It was like that poem that you read by Kipling at the beginning of the session. Our people are a fairly simple, straightforward people. It doesn't come to them to conspire against other people. But we have been saddled with a struggle against people. We don't need to go into too much detail there, but I think everyone grasps this, who are very conspiratorial. And they were able to take control of a nation of Anglo-Saxon farmers and related peoples very easily, getting that nation back from them when they're paranoid and are constantly looking for any sign of resistance is going to be a much more difficult thing. But our people were naive. This stuff has, I could go on for hours about this. Let me say by way of heading off criticism that I am a Protestant. I might be considered ethically to be a hyper-Protestant because I'm a Presbyterian and I'm descended from Presbyterian martyrs. But I think the Protestant Reformation greatly accentuated individualism among Anglo-Saxons. And it was, maybe the Reformation should have gone to Spaniards or something, and the Anglo-Saxons should have become Roman Catholics. But I think the Reformation created a lot of sense of individualism. And then you had the problem that the Anglo-Saxons, the English-speaking people, who still set the tone of our people in America, they lived on an island where they had very little to threaten them. They'd only been conquered, which is the Anglo-Saxons came to Great Britain in about 500 A.D. They've only been conquered one time. That was by the Normans almost 1,000 years ago. The Germans and the Poles and the Russians and the Greeks and the Spaniards, they had to scrap. They had to fight for their existence. The Spaniards had to fight for hundreds of years to get their country back from the Muslims. The Greeks were oppressed by the Turks for almost five centuries. The Russians were overrun by the Mongols and had to fight hard to break free of the Mongols. The Poles were stuck between Germany and Russia and had tough other white people on either side against whom they had to struggle for their national existence. And the Germans were surrounded by people like the Poles, the Slavs, the French, the British, and others. So the people on the continent were much tougher. And I think if we are to be delivered, if we are to win, which I hope we will, I would not be at all surprised to see the leadership that leads the white Christian people of America out to carry our destiny onward and free us will be gone from what we used to call white Native Americans, from Italians, Lithuanians, Poles, people like that.
Well, Sam, we have to go to a break. This will be our first break of the second hour. We'll be right back to Sam Dixon, your friend and mine, an absolute stalwart in our movement, absolute defender of the white race. Be right back, people.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Well, dear people, dear Blood River Radio family, I'd like to thank you so much for all y'all do. We told you many times, and it can't be overly stressed, without your support, you would not be hearing people like the people that we had on the first hour, Matt Goodwin, Jacob Tyler, Boots on the Ground at Charlottesville. We all forged a brotherhood there, and we also have the great Sam Dixon on What a man. What a gentleman. What a Southerner. What a Southerner. What a white man. What a warrior for our people. And he was talking about how, for instance, I'd like to comment on what he said. He brought up Luther. A friend of mine gave me a book, Sam, recently called, let's see, I think it's The Legacy of Luther, and I'm a slow reader, but I've got where I think you, I see some points you made. It seems clear, some of the points you made. Luther, you know, he broke away from the Catholic Church. Everybody knows about the 95 theses that he nailed to the church at Wittenberg, Germany, I believe it was. And he, you know, his thesis was kind of like, in a nutshell, was sola scriptura, sola fide, sola Deo. Now, all scripture, all faith, all God. And he said, which is so greatly deviated from the Catholic Church, where you have a strict hierarchy, and which pretty much eliminates individualism, I would say, to back up what Sam said. He said that he did not believe in, like, a pope or that kind of a hierarchy. He said that pretty much, I guess Paul said it, once that every man or is a priest. Every man, we are of a royal priesthood. Every man should be a priest. It should be broken down. So, you know, instead of having a hierarchy like that, that's the way I get it, you know, with my little feeble mind. But I think you hit on something right there, Sam. Go back to you, Sam.
I know that as a Presbyterian, you're scrambling up John Calvin with the Apostle Paul. It was actually John Calvin who said that he believed in the priesthood of all believers. But he did not mean it the way you hear it quoted, and it's been taken over by liberals now. They've used it to argue that anybody should be a clergyman. That is not what it meant. What it meant in the context of the time was Calvin was defending the idea that lay people also could take charge of the reformation of the church, that the kings were entitled to reform the church when the church refused to reform. But you mentioned Catholic. You know, we're all Catholic. We're all Catholic, and one of the things we need to do is to think about what will be the basis for citizenship if we get, as we hope, our own country again. The Jews have their own country in Israel, and of course you have to be Jewish to move there. They're not taking in Haitian refugees, and they take only their own kind. And we have to decide who will be allowed to come into our country and be a citizen. And I have a formula, which is that it has to be somebody, almost all of whose ancestors were Christians as of 1492, because at that time, before the conversion of the Indians, we all of us had the same creeds and the same churches and basically the same. And we're all Catholic. They are Roman Catholic. We are Presbyterian Catholic. Others are Lutheran Catholics. We are all Catholic. But anyway, religion is something else that I'm not interested in dividing people up. White people have got to work together. And these family feuds that we've been very adept at have got to be shelved. The English have got, and Scots have got to stop hating the Irish, and the Irish have to stop hating us, and the Germans and French have to stop hating each other, and the Germans and the Slavs have to stop hating each other. I think that's largely happening. I think increasingly, white Europeans all over the world are realizing that we all share the same culture and religion, a blend of Christianity and the paganism of antiquity, and that we're all in this fight as allies and cousins, and these family feuds have to be set aside.
Couldn't agree more. As a matter of fact, you just summed up with the general, one of my favorite people in the world. I'm sure you know him, Sam. It's General Nick Glasnevik, Major General Nick Glasnevik. He's now in Croatia. He's on our show from time to time. And his family, they were staunch, strict Catholics. One of the great things that I've, honors that I have, he was in a monastery or, you know, where the monks are. I'm not sure which kind it was, about 5 weeks ago, and he had them to pray for me and Blood River Radio, and that brought tears to my eyes. But, you know, he said the same thing. And before we go into Charlottesville, I'll ask you this question. You know, there's kind of like a controversy. Well, not a controversy. There's some disagreement between the Orthodox Christians. I've been to an Orthodox church. I can't tell a lot of difference between them and the Catholics. The big, I would say, if anything, the Orthodox Church is more structured even than the Catholic Church. But Sam, you know,
no, I don't think so.
You don't think so? I hadn't been there a lot, but
no.
They were.
No.
You know, boy, I tell you what, you got to be in shape there to do genuflect. They do the genuflect sign of the cross about 2 or 3 times a minute. But my question before we go to Charlottesville, Sam, is, by the way, Sam Dixon was in Charlottesville. We're going to go to that pretty soon. We're going to talk about that. Do you think, from what you've seen in the world scene, is there a chance us healing the rift between the Catholics, the Protestants, the Orthodox Christians, and all this alphabet soup of churches we have in the United States, you know, the Episcopalian, Catholic, you know, Presbyterian, you mentioned, Church of Christ, and blah, blah, on and on and on. Are people waking up enough, Sam? Are they realizing that, or is our race going to wake up in time? How can we wake these people up, Sam?
Well, I think really religion has become quite unimportant, and certainly among Western Europeans. It's very important to Russians and Slavs. But I think it's pretty much over for white Americans and for British people. I think the intense religious hatreds are fading away. What we have now that has come to the fore are social class differences. And these are hidden in America because we Americans don't want to admit that we have a class system like every nation does. But so many of the people, the white liberals who voted for Biden and things like that, they're motivated by the desire to feel superior to working people, and working people are really mistreated in profound ways in our society. But liberals who like every once in a while on Labor Day they like to revisit the issue and talk about, like Franklin Roosevelt, that they're on the side of the working people. And of course, they're not at all. The greatest enemy the working people have. But basically, their attitude is that the working people are a pathology that needs to be cured. That somebody who's a plumber, an electrician, or a welder, a roofer, that they have meaningless lives, and they have to be educated, and because they've all got to move up, end quote, in the pecking order. Basically, their attitude is that until the entire country it consists of faculty members at Harvard University, we won't have eliminated injustice. So this is founded upon profound contempt for what working people do. Plumbers, electricians, roofers, welders, these people are entitled to great respect. They don't need to be redone and reformed and lifted up. I think that this sort of class division, the social justice, the warrior virtue signaling that I find among upper middle class whites, that's a real rift that's got to be cured.
You know, Sam, you probably that's a very interesting point. Remember, we talked about that the other night, Sam. But I've noticed around where I live, we have a lot of Mexicans, and I guess in people from South America, I just lump them all together as Mexicans. They could be Ecuadorian or whatever. But some of them have become, I would say, by my standards, wealthy. They have some of them have hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of equipment. I run in these real rich neighborhoods because it's pretty much crime free. I pretty much stopped going down to the river because the chances of getting shot down there are about 1 in 4 now. But anyway, I've noticed they had I was coming through this rich neighborhood and I've seen more than one huge, gigantic truck that can reach up and trim limbs from trees 75, 80, 100 feet high. And these are very, very expensive pieces of equipment. They have their own wood chip machines. They can throw logs there and chip these machines up. They have lawnmowers that look like tractors would look like 50 years ago when my grandfather was farming in Arkansas. But here's what I think. I'm going to run it by you. These Mexicans and these South Americans, whatever, that they're doing this work that you just mentioned, that a lot of our people look down upon and think they're too good to do that and they need to be reformed. Their children are going to be the ones, you correct me if I'm wrong, Sam, they're going to be the ones in Vanderbilt, in Harvard, in Yale, at MIT, etc. And then that's going to further push our people down. Sam, when we come back from the break, you can answer that. I thought I heard the music. Maybe I was wrong. No, I heard the music. We'll be right back, Sam. You can answer that question. And then I would like to take us into Charlottesville, and I want you to tell, if you don't mind, our dear listeners, your experience in Charlottesville. Be right back, people, with the one and only Sam Dixon, my friend, my brother, and yours if you're a white person who loves your own race. Be right back.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News. I'm Brad Bernards. Residents of Sydney and its home state of New South Wales will now face fines of up to $3,700 for violating coronavirus stay-at-home orders, which were extended Saturday following a record number of daily COVID-19 infections in the area. While Australia has recorded a surge in COVID-19 cases in recent weeks, its numbers still remain much lower than other wealthy countries across the globe. Richard Cortez, an Hidalgo County, Texas judge, discussed his recent meeting with Department of Homeland Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas and said he urged the chief to put a pause on immigration into the U.S.
And that was my recommendation to the secretary, that he just has to put a pause. I called it a moratorium, which I think by legal definition, that's a legal delay of the law, because we just, I mean, the volume is just too high.
This is USA Radio News.
Rockstar Radio is looking for a co-host. Yes, you heard me correctly. Nationally syndicated radio show and popular podcast, Rockstar Radio with Billy Gerard, is looking for a co-host. In fact, two segment co-hosts. One will join Billy weekly talking about all things financial, and another for a weekly review of the national real estate and mortgage market. Co-hosting with Billy Gerard could be the move that puts your career into overdrive. For all the details and to schedule an audition with Billy, send an email to bill@rockstar.today. That's bill@rockstar.today. Or go to rockstar.today/co-host for all the details. Rockstar Radio is looking for two expert co-hosts. It could be you. Email bill@rockstar.today or go to rockstar.today/co-host. Being on the radio with Billy will make you the expert in the field. It could take your career over the moon. Get all the audition details at rockstar.today/co-host.
The University of Nebraska rejects a resolution to stop critical race theory. Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts on Fox News reacts to the university's decision, saying opponents of CRT were being shut out from the conversation.
When the resolution was proposed, the chancellor's office at the University of Nebraska put out a statement saying that anybody who was against critical race theory was unwittingly helping the Ku Klux Klan, which basically means if you're opposed to critical race theory, you're either stupid or a racist.
House of Representative staffers can make nearly $200,000 a year due to a new order from House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. That's more than virtually all House and Senate members make. Most receive $174,000 a year. In a letter to colleagues, Pelosi said this order will help Congress recruit and retain the outstanding and diverse talent that we need, and it also helps ensure parity between employees of the House of Representatives and other employees of the federal government.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Well, dear radio people, Blood River Radio family, man, I'm excited tonight to have Sam Dixon on. I'll tell you what, I've wanted him on our show for a long time. What a great man. I've admired him. I first saw him speak in what they call the Quad City in Alabama. I think it was in 2007. I hadn't been out of cardiac ICU but just about a month. And we went over there, James Edwards and his lovely wife, Danny. Danny rode down there with me and Brenda, and we met up down there with James and a lot of the other guys down there. Bill Rowland, bless his heart, he's gone now. We all love Bill. But I heard Sam speak there, and I've never forgot it. I was an instant fan of Sam. But Sam, like we said before, he was in Charlottesville, and he saw all that hell break loose. And I think, Sam, I couldn't hear for the music right when we were coming back, but I think you said you wanted to go into Charlottesville right now or talk about that. Is that right, Sam?
Well, we might as well. Charlottesville has become like the Selma Bridge. It's been made into a tool, a hammer with which to hammer us. You know, and the truth about Charlottesville has got to be gotten out. Our enemies have no respect for truth at all. I was reading something that the Anti-Defamation League put out the other day, in which they talked about they compared and contrasted Charlottesville to the, quote, insurrection, end quote, on January 6th. And they said that in Charlottesville, there are various myths. And one of the myths they had was that the people in the Charlottesville government had caused what transpired. That's not a myth. That's been established by the city's own lawyer, whom they hired to do an investigation, Timothy Heafy. And his Heafy report forced the resignation of the police chief, who was the first African-American police chief in Charlottesville, because he established that the police chief had ordered the police not to provide police protection to people attending the rally, so as to create a gimmick, a way that the city could violate the First Amendment right of the whites trying to pull their rally around General Lee's statue. And he also established that the police chief had threatened cops when the city hired this former federal prosecutor to do this investigation, Heathy. The police chief threatened the police officers that if they told him about the orders to stand down and permit the crimes, that they would be their careers would be destroyed. And as a result, within 24 hours of the report coming out, the first African-American police chief had to resign. And, of course, the system media airbrushed all of that out. There was almost no reporting about it. And they're able, people like Anderson Cooper can still go on prattling about Charlottesville and how the neo-Nazis came there to kill people and they killed Heather Heyer and all this sort of stuff. He can go, he knows it's a lie, but he goes on lying over and over again, as does the New York Times and as the Anti-Defamation League goes on lying. So yes, that is what happened. It isn't just a question of people like you and me saying that this happened. It's the city's own lawyer. Confession against interest is what's called in law. And there's just no question about it. That is what happened. And as we all know, the rules are not applied equally. 2.5 hours after the police chief got his wishes and was able to declare the lawful gathering of the white people to hold their meeting to be a criminal assembly and was able to disperse us. Within 2.5 hours later, after everybody had left, James Fields, had the incident of the car and Heather Heyer died. And the media hooks that up, that Heather Heyer was killed. Sometimes you even hear them say, 3 people died as a result of Charlottesville, by which they're including 2 police officers. Who died in the course of a helicopter crash that had nothing to do with anyone there. It's a tragedy, but no one can be blamed for that. It was simply a complete accident. But anyway, they will never apply that rule to their own left-wing groups. In fact, they will go on defending the Antifa. President Biden, in his debate with Trump, when asked, amazingly enough, whether the FBI and the Attorney General would do anything about Antifa when he became president, said no. They don't do anything about it because it's not an organization. It's an idea. Well, that's very interesting. The Atlanta Antifa had a death threat up on me on a local website that they call the Atlanta Antifa. They said that I needed to die, and that's their purpose, is to bring about my death. I don't think an idea set up that website. I don't think an idea put that threat up. I don't think it's an idea that's beating people bloody out in Oregon, in Portland. But they will not apply these rules to their own side. And the Black Lives Matter movement, you probably know, in one of the Black Lives rallies out in Dallas, a supporter and adherent to the Black Lives movement murdered 5 white police officers. And that took place at the rally. There wasn't a 2.5 hour delay between the rally being shut down, as ours was, and Heather Heyer died. But if you tried to say that the Black Lives Matter movement had a rally for the purpose of killing white cops and stuff, the Anderson Cooper and all of them would do a complete 180 turn, and they'd start talking about McCarthyism. That's McCarthyism. And while they engage in McCarthyism 24/7 on a really ludicrous basis. But yeah, it, the truth of Charlottesville is completely opposite to what the system has put out.
You know, Sam, before I go to ask you to what connection we had, maybe with the same players on the Antifa, the communist side that played to set the things up in Charlottesville, before I ask you, you know, what commonality that Charlottesville had with Washington, D.C. January 6th, and if those same players were in play setting that Washington, D.C. thing up, because, you know, the FBI, for instance, I look at the FBI like, you know, like a mafia. But you've been an attorney of great esteem, and you have been in the who's who of American lawyers, and before you got on the wrong side. Before you
but
got on the side of Jesus.
They did not take me out for that. I can't blame them. I just didn't. You have to pay a fee to stay in, and I never paid the fee. So after a couple of years, they took me out. That's just the way the system works. But go on.
Well, you're one hell of an attorney. Everybody knows that.
This federal.
I'd put you up against Perry Mason anytime, any day, Sam. But you know, this federal judge, I've always wondered about this, to show you a double, a triple, a quadruple standard that's held against our people. You know, the federal judge reinstated an order, which we shouldn't even, in my opinion, we shouldn't have to have a court order to meet, to exercise our rights as free Americans, to go down a footpath open to free men, to march into Charlottesville, open to free men, like we say, not committing a crime. But we did, as you mentioned, I say we, Jason Kessler and other people went to get this to a federal judge to have the permit reinstated where we could meet and peaceably assemble to air our grievances, you know. What about that? I'm going to ask you, Sam, what about the mayor and the governor? Now, I'm wondering, why did that federal judge not get in touch with the attorney general and say, hey, we need federal marshals to go arrest the mayor and the chief of police in Charlottesville and to arrest the governor and bring them into my court and let them show just cause why they committed contempt of court, why did they thump their nose at that court order? Why didn't he do that, Sam?
Well, actually, I'm sorry to puncture a balloon, but the ACLU represented our people in getting us the right to have the rally. But the court order did not include language with, you know, ordering the governor and the mayor and the others to obey the court order. They just ordered the city to give the license, the permit, to restore the permit and let us have the meeting. And, you know, if other language, so that gives them an out that, well, there was no wording in the order directed at these people. But that's a trivial thing because, of course, the rules never would be enforced. You know, they would not be brought into court. They would not be punished. I saw this in litigation with these leftists. The courts would not enforce the discovery laws. The law meant almost nothing in the court. There are only a handful of judges that would follow the law. Most of them would not. And, you know, the reality is that something that surprises me in my life is that when I became I was never a naive lawyer. I knew how things were, but I was surprised how naive our people were about the courts.
Sam, we have to take another break. This will be the last break. I hate to interrupt you, my brother, but we've got to go to our last break in this hour. Be right back, people. We have the one and only Sam Dixon on Dissecting Charlottesville. Be right back.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death, like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
Well, dear people, thank you so much for hanging on. I was just sharing a good story with Sam. I'm just going to diverge for a minute to tell Sam. I was telling Sam how when me and James Edwards used to be out, we used to call it the bean field. Our radio station was out in Tipton County, right there on the edge of the Wolf River Bottoms where me and my dad used to rabbit hunt when I was a kid, and there was bean fields and swamps, and we would go in there. I'm not kidding you, people. I'll make this short because we can't waste Sam's time. But me and James would go in there. It would be so damn hot. We would strip down to our underwear, sweating like pigs. We didn't have a thermometer. I bet you it was 108, 110 degrees. It was an inch. And then we had to, at every break, me and James had to run outside our underwear, people driving by and stuff, sweating like pigs. I mean, and we would fight wolves. Snakes, you know, a snake shorted out the printer. Snake got in and shorted out the whole computer room. We fought wasps. I mean, man, we had the one on broadcast bad to go through that. But, you know, me and James will always be submitted about that. That was kind of like a brotherhood forged there in the heat. But anyway, Sam, going back to you, I was asking you, I was so naive. I'm glad you clarified that because I wonder why could a federal judge, why could he not send out United States Marshals and have those clowns arrested? I'm glad you...
we can talk about other examples of how bad the legal system is. One of the, as I was saying when we had to take our break, I was surprised at how naive people were when I started practicing law. People would come to me, really extreme people, far more extreme than you or I, but affiliated with really very extreme groups. And they have this idea that we'll just file a lawsuit, and the courts will follow the law. I don't know where this idea came, that when you get out of the legislative and executive branches of the government and into the judiciary, all of a sudden everybody's a straight arrow. That is not the case. They are not straight arrows. So a few of them are, but most of them are not. They are system employees, and they're going to use their power to accomplish what the system wants. Look at the situation in Charlottesville. Do you recall any situation in the history of the South during the civil rights movement, the so-called civil rights movement, the black rights movement, where a Southern sheriff or police chief instructed the police not to give police protection, but to permit crimes to be permitted against black people? I don't recall that.
I don't either.
So there, the police chief in Charlottesville was worse than the most segregated town in Mississippi. I mean, they're by their own values, they're terrible people. But Anderson Cooper and New York Times, Atlanta Journal-Constitution, National Public Radio, they all liked this. So they airbrushed out the report of what the news reports, of what the Heathrow report said, and they go right on with the myth of Charlottesville. And, you know, these people, we cannot live in the same country with these people. You know, you cannot live with people who will not play by the rules, and they're not playing by the rules. They've arrested 600 people for this thing in Washington, D.C. on the 6th, which is really a rather minor thing. You know, some people broke into the Capitol, it is wrong, but most of them went there and, you know, just sort of wandered in behind the others, and only a handful of them really did anything criminal. You know, a few of them interfered with Pelosi's cell phone or whatever it was, and yeah, but it was really a very minor thing. But they've arrested 600 people for what 150 people did, and they're holding them without bond. These are people who have no danger of flight, no danger of repeating what they did. They're held in jail pending trial, and so even if they're acquitted, they will have served many months in jail. This is an outrage. It's an outrageous crime against the Bill of Rights. But the same liberal people who supported the Warren Court, which I agree with most of their decisions, about the rights of the accused, all of that's out the window now. These people are totally in favor of just relentless prosecution, violation of people's rights. These people are being held in solitary confinement for months. And this is simply an outrage. No arrest of the Antifa, but 600 people held without bond in solitary confinement in Washington, D.C., and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, they like this. National Public Radio likes this. The New York Times editorial board likes this. The CNN likes this. This is what they want. And you can look at this and you can tell what these people's attitude toward European Americans is. And it's an attitude of unbridled hatred. And they really want us to cease to exist. They're not going to stop. They're not going to moderate themselves. They're just going to become more and more aggressive as time goes on. And that's why this thing will eventually, I fear, come to a boil. And maybe we can finally establish our own country and leave them in their country. They can do whatever they want in their country.
Sam, you have really hit on all cylinders. It brings me to the great Alexander Solzhenitsyn, one of my favorite quotes. The people may be tired of me reading this, but this segues right into what you said. I'll expand upon it. I hope the people don't get bored. I'm going to read this. It's not that long. Alexander Solzhenitsyn was talking about when he was in the gulag. He says, and here he goes, how we burned in the camps later thinking, what would things have been like if every security operative, when he went out at night to make an arrest, had been uncertain whether he would return alive and had to say goodbye to his family? Or if during periods of mass arrest, as for example in Leningrad, when they arrested a quarter of the entire city, people had not simply sat there in their lairs, paling in terror at every bang of the downstairs doors and at every step on the staircase, but had understood that they had nothing left to lose. I heard you say that in the Quad City back in 2007. And, Sam, and had boldly set up in the downstairs hall an ambush of half a dozen people with axes, hammers, pokers, or whatever else was at hand. After all, you knew ahead of time that those blue caps were out at night for no good purpose, and you could be sure ahead of time they would be cracking his skull. This quote here cuts off. It didn't read it, but I can kind of finish it. He says, it's not there, but I kind of remember it. He said, but we did not love freedom enough. We did not love liberty enough. He said, we did not really realize the seriousness of the situation. He said, but we really deserved what we got. But Sam, I think I know what you're, this may be a rhetorical question, but are we that close to where we're going to have to just fight, resist against a complete lawless, well, I don't even call this what we have in Washington, D.C., a lawless cabal. They're talking about going door to door. of forcing the jab down us. They're even talking about setting up checkpoints on the highways like they're doing in Canada right now, forcing people to get the jab. Sam, how close to this situation here that Alexander Solzhenitsyn was talking about? Are we that close yet?
Well, I don't know. There's no way of telling. They're getting their way. As long as they're getting their way, I don't think that necessarily they will become more aggressive than they are now. But we see this happening. And the salient thing, the most impressive thing, is the lack of any reaction. That is the most remarkable feature of modern American society, is the passivity of American society. So far, it seems to be almost nothing that they can do that will provoke a response. And looking at this stuff that's going on. Yeah, you had Maxine Waters go to that courthouse in Minneapolis and give a speech to the Black Lives Matter rally before the jury went into deliberation, threatening mob violence all over the country if they didn't bring in a conviction. And not one single Democrat in the House of Representatives was willing to condemn her for that. They voted 219 to nothing not to condemn appeals to mob violence unless the jury did what she was intimidating them to do. This is really, you would think there'd be a reaction. There's no reaction. I say, as a lawyer, there's no reaction from the Bar Association or from any legal writer anywhere in America. They're openly now trying to terrorize lawyers. They talk about it on national public radio. They write about it in the law magazines that I get, that they are going to punish lawyers who represented President Trump. And there's a group called the Lincoln Project, the liberal Republicans, who brag that they are funding things to expose these lawyers, to attack them, get them fired from their firm. There are people leaking who their wives and husbands are, where their children go to school. There's not one outcry from any of these liberal men of conscience about that. There isn't a single bar association in the nation that will say the right to a lawyer is a fundamental right of the Bill of Rights. And you do not attack a lawyer for the fact that a lawyer represents a client. This is really remarkable. The President of the United States, if you represent the President of the United States, these people want to ruin your career. And they brag about it. I get a publication called the Fulton Daily Report, which is the legal organ in Atlanta. And they had a thing on the front page gloating that a lawyer was fired from his firm because he was a retainer lawyer for the Republican Party and listened in to one of the hearings on the vote fraud cases. No, it wasn't even counsel record. So, Americans are going to have to suffer a lot more. They're going to have to, like the poem you read said, they're going to have to be cornered. Even a rat will fight when it's cornered. And we have to have faith that at some point our people will turn and take a stand. And right now they're individuals. They're all looking out for number one. They're not a team. They're not team players. They won't help each other. Like you were saying about blacks, they come to each other's help. Whites won't do that. Whites get ahead by betraying other whites. And that all of this is something that has to be gone through. There's a line that Sophocles wrote in Oedipus Rex. All praise to Zeus, who setting man upon the road of mortal life, made this a changeless law that man shall learn by suffering. And wisdom comes from suffering. And our people are suffering now. They need to suffer more. And gradually wisdom will come to them through suffering. And we have to hope that our people have produced those before, that they will eventually do so again.
Well, Sam, unsettle you to come to the end of the hour to voice what you said.
Well, thank you. Grandmother's, I really appreciate it.
Yes, sir. We've got a minute, about 15 seconds. But, my grandmother said to voice what you said. A bought lesson is the best learned. And you talked about the apathy in our people. General Nick Glastovic, I have his quote he told me, pasted on my wall. It says, apathy is the new atheism. Sam, Thank you so, so much. I have enjoyed this interview.
Thank you, and good luck to all of your listeners. There's a lot to be optimistic about, and let's keep our chins up. Thanks.
Yes, sir. God bless you. Thank you so much, Sam. Thank you, my brother. What a treat to have you on tonight. I know our listeners loved it. Well, thank you also, Cameron and Jay, for bringing us on. Thank you, Matt and Jacob. Thank you, Blood River audience, for keeping us on the air. Well, good night.